Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Liberty Lens. I am your host, Big John, or should I say, I am your co-host, because I share, at most, equal billing with this gentleman. So I am Big John. I am your co-host this week, along with my good friend, Mr. Mike Termott. Mike, how are you doing this week?
Great to be with you, John. It has been quite a week, and so I've been looking forward to talking with you.
I know, bursting at the seams, folks. We were trading messages back and forth before the show. What are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about this. Plenty to talk about. It's an exciting week.
The tricky part is picking what not to talk about yet and put that off and talk about what's hot at this very moment.
Yeah, the red pen sometimes is more important than the black pen, Mike, as you well know. Okay, let's do a quick intro here. In the last 10 days or so, I would venture to say, Mike, that we've seen an unprecedented wave of pardon activity on the part of both outgoing President Biden and incoming President Trump. So I'm going to read a very quick set of numbers for the audience, and then I want you to react to it, okay? Outgoing President Biden, over 8,000 individuals affected, which at the time surpassed modern presidential records, was what I got out of my research. The majority of his pardons and commutations were issued in the final month of his presidency. Last-minute pardons, literally 15 minutes before President Trump was sworn in, like he was walking up the ramp, Biden was walking off the ramp, pardons were taking place. 15 minutes right before Biden left office, there was another wave of pardons and commutations. Some notable things about Biden's pardons and commutations. He pardoned, rather, Leonard Peltier, who a very controversial figure, in prison for killing two FBI agents in 1977. He was released the focus of a lot of protest, and if you're a Rage Against the Machine fan, he was the subject of one of their songs. Family members, more controversially, Biden family members, including his brother and sister, administration officials, Dr. Fauci, General Milley, members of the J6 Congressional Committee, all preemptively pardoned for any potential federal crimes. Mass commutations of the federal death sentences of 37 of 40 federal death row inmates. The only three not included in this mass commutation were Dylan Roof, who was convicted of mass killing nine black churchgoers in Charleston. Robert Bowers, the gunman who killed 11 people at the Tree of Life Synagogue, and the Boston Marathon bomber, Tsarnaev, was also not included in those commutations. And, of course, he issued pardons for several nonviolent drug offenders, including those serving life sentences. Interestingly enough, not Ross Ulbricht. So before we go on to President Trump's incoming pardons, Mike, give me your thoughts on former President Biden's massive executive orders, pardons, and commutations.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, and we should probably go line by line, which is the first thing that I think everyone needs to bear in mind as we conduct this analysis. The first piece of the analysis is that it needs to be line by line. Mm. I'm not a big fan of this, you know, I'm going to pardon several hundred people, which sends a signal that you believe that there's something systemically wrong. Now, if you do believe there's something systemically wrong, right?
Right.
Say so. Make the case. Because I think that there's a couple of different reasons why pardons take place, and I think that we're waking up to the idea that there is a new reason, and that is merely to send a political message. One is that you think that there's something systemically wrong with the way prosecutions and sentencing have gone. For example, I don't have a problem with saying, we as a government cannot support the death penalty. But you undermine your argument when you say, except for these two, right? If you're really going to make the case, then you've got to make the case by commuting all of the death sentences. Otherwise, it's not a matter of principle. It's just a matter of, well, I, Joe Biden, think that this crime wasn't as big a deal as this other crime. That doesn't, right. You know, that doesn't fly. And by the way, it should have been done early in his presidency. Otherwise, you make it look like not so much a matter of principle, but just personal preference. As a libertarian, I don't like the death penalty because I don't like the government assuming to itself so much power, the ability to take someone's life. Right. Not because I don't think that these people deserve it. I haven't looked deeply into certain of these cases, but as you point out, some of these people were convicted of multiple murders, including the whack jobs who were racially motivated and went after the church attendees. There is quite literally no punishment that, in my view, would be too much. I just have a problem with the government taking to itself the power to do so. I think that, you know, this is a matter for God to dispense with. And if Joe Biden had said that, I think he'd have a lot more people on board than he did. But, you know, to your point about there being 8,000, unless you articulate why these people, why those people, you just leave the impression either that you've got some weird pretense going on that no one can understand, or that you believe that the system is systemically flawed. You need to say so. Because that's a big deal. That is not an insignificant number of people, right?
Yeah.
That is a big deal. Now, he pardoned family members. This is a particular problem for two reasons. One is that there is no reason to believe, and he said that, you know, there was some political motivation. I have no doubt that there was. But he really didn't make much of a case, and I don't think most Americans believe, that the system was screwed up in investigating his son, right? If anything, there's evidence to suggest that the investigation was held back, that was suppressed, that information was censored from being online, that there was no transparency coming out of the FBI, and that the FBI was slow walking and then cut that horrific deal that even the court wouldn't put up with, which is really unusual for a court to say both sides have agreed and we're not putting up with it. That's a weird reaction from a court. So I think that this is a real problem. But the bigger problem, the larger problem with the Hunter Biden pardon, of course, is that his dad is linked, that there is reason to believe that money was funneled from the Chinese government through Chinese companies to Hunter, to his uncle, and eventually to his dad. And his dad is out there bragging about getting rid of a prosecutor that was a problem for the company from whom the money was originated. Well, I mean, that is a problem. I would have been okay if there were a court that said, you know what, the president has plenary power here, but this is a bridge too far. You know, we can't put up with someone extending a pardon in order to shut down an investigation that could lead to the revelation of his own criminal activity.
Right.
I would be okay with that, and that is a matter for adjudication by a court that I don't believe we're going to see, but that's too bad. So to the other point, I think that we're waking up to the idea of pardons becoming a new political weapon.
Yeah, that was the part I was going to ask you about, which is, we've had instances of these pardons. Like, people have very short memories, especially folks on social media, right? I've seen things like, no president has ever pardoned a family member before. No, Carter did it for his brother Billy, right? You know, I mean, it's happened before. You see things like, oh, pardons have never been used for political purposes. No, Ford, Jordan, Nixon. You know, it's happened in our lifetimes easily, right? So I think that's one problem. We have short attention spans. But do you get the sense, and I think you've answered this already, that the pardon itself is now openly politicized, where, you know, Trump coming in, one of his campaign promises was, you elect me, I'm pardoning, and we'll get to this detail in a second, I'm pardoning this whole laundry list of people.
Yep.
You have Biden saying, hey, listen, we lost the election, which means I got a guy threatening to investigate everybody who ever dared investigate him, either rightly or wrongly. So I've got to preemptively, like the whole J6 committee, blanket immunity, Schiff, all those guys, Cheney, all of them, right? Talk to me a little bit about that, because the family one, as nepotism goes, we all see it. It's transparent, right? But in some ways, I've also seen like apologists, both, I have to admit, both from the right and the left saying, look, it's his kid. What do you want him to do? It's his brother. What do you want him to do?
Yeah, like, the big problem, as I see it, the big problem with the nepotism in this particular case is that it shuts down an investigation that could lead to the old man. That's what makes it different. Otherwise, were it not for the connection to the Chinese government on one end, and the president of the United States at the other end, you know, we're just worrying about how strong the links are in between. Were it not for that, I think most Americans really wouldn't care that much if, you know, Bill Clinton pardons his brother for drug-related offenses. Nobody, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, you roll your eyes and you move on.
I was going to say, people may not be okay with it, but they grasp the concept of it. And yeah. I think they're willing to say, I don't agree with it, but I get it.
It's not going to undermine the efficacy of the federal government of the United States, whereas the Biden case quite literally could if it became, modus operandi, and no one is suggesting that it would.
But specifically, to the J6, the blanket pardon for all the congressmen involved, the staffers involved, well, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's complicated, but to your earlier point, what some of these have in common is that it's not merely political in the sense that this particular case is political, but rather the nature of the pardon has become a political lever. In some sense, it rhymes with civil disobedience. And I think in the Trump case, you have to correctly view it. This is not an excuse, by the way. But I think correctly viewed, the Trump pardons are in the context of two things. Biden pardons.
Right.
And Trump prosecutions. Right. If you're not thinking about the Biden pardons and the Trump prosecutions at the same time, you really don't get the January 6th pardons. This is not an excuse, merely an observation.
Right.
And I think that we need to be very, very wary of where this goes in the future. Think about both parties having given up fiscal conservatism. I'm going to connect these dots in a moment. Fiscal conservatism the last several decades, right?
Right.
It used to be, you know, when we were kids, both parties would at least make statements about fiscal conservatism in the same way that both parties until recently have made important statements about law and order. You get where I'm going.
Right.
But it became politically more valuable, efficient perhaps, to give that up and instead run down the other party for having not spent money correctly. But we spend money more correctly. And so this was the beginning of the erosion of fiscal conservatism. And now both parties spend money damn near willy-nilly, right? I think that we need to be very wary that the politicization of our justice system doesn't go down the same path. The analogy being, there are certain cases where you might like the way the federal government spends money. You might like the way the White House pardons certain people. Maybe in certain cases, in either one of those realms, it is, objectively speaking, a good idea. But that doesn't mean that systemically we should be according these people these powers. So however you feel about the J6, we'll get into it, but however you personally feel about the J6 pardons and clemency actions, the commutations, remember that there is a larger context here, and that might make you feel better and it might make you feel worse.
Right.
To your point, it was the fulfillment of a promise.
Right. And that's what I was going to ask you. A couple of episodes ago, I think it was when we were reviewing the nomination of Kash Patel to be FBI director. Like, I think between the two of us, we kind of came to the conclusion that given Patel's rhetoric, we said, look, it's understandable. but at some time the vendettas have to stop. Like, literally, I view this as a mafioso vendetta, right? You did this to me, I'm going to do it to two of yours. You did it to two of mine, I'm going to do it to four of yours. And you have this escalating Hatfield-McCoy vendetta type of thing. Use whatever term you want. And now we see it in the pardons, right? You pardoned your criminal family. Guess what? I'm upping it. I'm pardoning an entire judiciary committee. Well, I'm going to pardon all these, quote, hostages that you have been holding for 4 years, right, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
And by the way, as we roll into now the Trump pardons, because let's kind of seamlessly do this, however you feel about J6, right? I'm not going to debate that with you right now. Blanket saying everybody gets to be released now, everybody convicted. I think personally that took even some supporters like J.D. Vance 2 or 3 days before the pardons were saying, hey, we're not going to release the guys from J6 who were convicted of violent crimes,
of attacking
police officers and things like that. And the next thing you know, everybody's walking out the door. How do you feel about two things?
Those of us who rolled our eyes and thought that the left was being a little dramatic by suggesting that J6 rioting was a fundamental and profound and existential threat to democracy, we thought, you know, maybe they're exaggerating and using rhetoric that they just don't need to use. Those of us who view January 6th, I still believe correctly, as, you know, a riot in which some people behaved very badly and some people merely behaved badly and some people merely behaved in a silly fashion, you know, a whole range, right? Those of us who are in that space, I think, are still back a week ago with J.D. Vance suggesting that, well, if you committed violence, you have to be held accountable.
Right.
I think that that's fairly basic stuff, and I think that that holds whether you're a Democrat, a Libertarian, a Republican, or anybody else, inside or outside of this country, right? That's pretty basic stuff. Pam Bondi said the same thing. And I was fascinated to see when President Trump was being interviewed in real time signing these things,
right?
He did not have a great answer when asked about this. I found that particularly fascinating because even if you disagreed with what he was doing, you would have expected him, you know, typically when he does stuff that people don't like, he's got a fairly robust argument. You know, he can be full-throated when he wants to be, even if he's irritating you, right?
Right.
And I did not get that impression from him whatsoever, which brings up one more facet that I don't think people are talking about enough. I've said this about the Biden White House. I've said this about the Kamala Harris campaign. I don't think he was served well by his staff. I think that there was very weak staff work here.
Mm.
And staff work defined fairly broadly. His appointees, even down to civil servants, a number of people have to be involved in crafting these things. There should have been greater time spent. Okay, boss, we're writing up these pardons for this reason, right? And we're writing up these commutations for this reason, right? And, you know, here's the spreadsheet. Here's your 9.5 by 11, or here's your card, or, you know, here's your here's your whatever form of communication. But this is what we're going to say as a White House. This is what we're going to say. You know, this is kind of what we're expecting you to say to back up this process about these various different cases and what's the difference. And even if he were to come up with something that maybe a Libertarian wouldn't be all that fond of.
Right.
You know, let's say he were to say, you know what? This is political. I think that they were prosecuted with political motivation. I think that it's part and parcel of coming after me personally, and I'm given pushback to, you know, get the pendulum to swing back toward the middle. This is not what I personally would have done, but you could imagine him saying that, right?
Right.
But he really wasn't prepared to, you know, maybe he will in the coming days.
Wasn't his answer something along the lines of, I don't know, or maybe?
We're going to look into, he said we're going to look into it, which I think is not a bad answer for 2 weeks ago.
Not for after the fact, right? Not after the fact, right?
Right. It was almost like I'll get back to you on all of this, which, you know, I get, you know, if he had said, well, we do have reasons for each one of these. I'm not prepared to articulate on a case-by-case basis, and I'll get back to you. But it fell fairly flat. I would have appreciated maybe even if he had turned it over to someone, right? If he had said, you know, here's my guy from DOJ or from White House, from General Counsel's office, you know, here's my guy who's going to talk in some detail on a case-by-case basis. I think a lot of people would have accepted that. Maybe they wouldn't have liked the answers.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as a matter of process, it would have come off better. So I think there's another facet here. I just don't think he was served well by the people surrounding him.
Yeah, and I'm trying to you know, after we do our shows, I collect feedback. You know, how did I act? How did Mike act? You know, one of the things that's always directed me is I'm way too quick to jump on Trump personally. So I'm trying to be more measured in my response here. I'm trying to be fair. So I got your point about Biden where you said, like, hey, if you believe that the death penalty is wrong, why did you exclude these three from the 40 sentences you commuted? You missed an opportunity to either say the death penalty is wrong or it's wrong, except in the cases of mass murder, where I think it's justified or there's no redemption.
Exactly.
Say something like that. Right.
And in this case, I think Trump missed an opportunity.
That's what I'm saying. He had the opportunity to say, I couldn't tell you every one of these guys, but the whole process stunk from the head down. That's why I'm giving a blanket.
Right. And I think that a lot of attorneys and a lot of other folks will recognize the old principle that if police misbehave in, say, the collection of evidence,
right,
or reading Miranda, or how certain things were processed, the penalty is the case is dismissed. No one suggests that that's an exoneration.
Right.
Right. No one suggests that that means that the guy didn't commit the crime.
Right.
It's just this is the remedy for having screwed up the process. If he had made some argument that rhymed with that,
right,
I think that we would have gotten it. The other thing that the White House didn't say was, you know, we think the sentences were too long. You know, everyone has been held accountable. They were in jail for a certain period of time. And, you know, we're not going to get into this, you know, counting months here and there, but we think the prosecution as a whole stunk, as you say, from the head down. And therefore, you know, right, the way that we correct this. The other angle is, you know, I used this term earlier, a form of civil disobedience.
Right.
We're not going to support a justice system. This is not something he said, right?
Right.
But you could imagine someone saying, we're not going to support a system in which everything just gets politicized, the way to correct this, right? And sometimes that means you're going to have to put up with some people being freed that shouldn't be.
Well, it's that old defense lawyer adage, right? Better that 10 guilty people go free than one innocent person go to jail, right? It's the same principle.
Right.
And I, to your point, I would have appreciated that. Or even the statement of, look, and this is what I was – let me save that. I'll save it to the end because the one thing I want to get to before we run out of time is very specifically for the folks watching us who I assume are of a libertarian nature bent or trying to learn more about libertarianism. Mike, tell me why – the full pardon of Ross Ulbricht, the famous hashtag Free Ross,
yep,
that libertarians have been chanting about. Tell me in a nutshell, A, why was it so important that this happened? B, the ramifications of it for the Libertarian Party going forward. And then the last one I'm going to throw in there, Mike, just so you get time to think about it, is the pardoning of Ross Ulbricht hypocritical, given some of the executive orders that Trump issued also in his first 2 days in office regarding the death penalty for drug dealers. So put that in the pot for a second.
Let me accidentally skip a piece. Let's make sure we cover all of that because they're all interesting questions.
Yeah.
And there are different levels to this, including a high-level political view. At the bottom and working our way up, as most of your viewers are aware, Ross was convicted of creating an online marketplace, a website where you could buy drugs.
The Silk Road.
You could also acquire
weapons,
fake IDs in order to, presumably, in order to buy drugs. And yes, I have heard the accusation that there were other things, other crimes committed there, but really what this was all about was a drug market.
And he was never charged with those other alleged things, like, correct?
Bingo.
Right.
Bingo. And so there's a couple of things to be said here. Those of us old enough remember at the time, the government was very upset about this because they were afraid it was going to explode, right? That one website, now there's going to be another. They're going to be playing whack-a-mole.
And Mike, I'm sorry not to interrupt you, but the other piece of this that I think was a boogeyman was that it was all crypto-based. It was based on Bitcoin, which
absolutely
was another thing.
And so this is going to be difficult for the government to control.
Right.
And so they had to set the precedent. They had to send a signal. They had to create an example. And so they went after this very, very hard. And they convinced the judge to hand down an enormous sentence, two life sentences plus 40 years. And so there's a couple of things wrong with the process. One is the political nature of it.
Right.
One is the extent to which the government wanted to maintain control. Now, there's another libertarian angle, which is that most of us libertarians don't believe that the drug trade itself should be illegal because we believe in two things. One, it violates your bodily autonomy because it's a victimless crime. And number two, speaking as a police officer, I just don't think the war on drugs as a practical matter works. I think the government assumes to itself enormous powers in an effort to suppress something based on a weird set of ethics that just doesn't hold water. So for all these reasons, libertarians also believe that the government should not have been going after this case at all, but given that it's illegal, at least we can understand it. But the sentencing got out of control, and that's because the government wanted to send a signal, and as we know, the judge took into consideration allegations made by the government that did not have evidence to support them. He was not convicted of these other crimes that the government believed he had engaged in.
He wasn't even charged with them.
Wasn't even charged with them.
And let's be clear, there were allegations, again, that he was never charged with, that were never allowed into evidence, I think. I could be wrong, that he had hired a contract killer to eliminate a rival, supposedly.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And I have no reason to believe that that's true. I have no idea. Yeah. But the point is that as a matter of judicial process, as a matter of fairness, as a matter of the system in which we want to live, you cannot allow a judge to hand down an enormous sentence because of something that was alleged by somebody.
Right.
And so, yes, the huge government power, the government motivation, the politics behind it, as well as just some sense of unfairness, two life sentences for creating a website and allowing traffic to take place. It should also be said that the government knew, we all knew at the time, that Ulbricht's motivation, which he had written about personally, was not to hurt anyone, was not even because he thought drugs were wonderful, right? It was to create a marketplace that undermined the government's ability to control people.
He was being an
ANCAP. I mean, you're singing libertarian music, right?
Right. He was being an ANCAP, let's face it. He was putting ANCAP principles, anarcho-capitalist principles, into action. He built what many ANCAPs only talk about, right? And to your point that you've eloquently stated, this was just a threat to the government. You had the looming specter of Bitcoin and crypto. Crypto means hidden. It must be nefarious, everyone. So you had that plus what you said, the drug trade again.
And government seized the crypto that Ross had control over, which I am told today would be worth $5 billion. So now, in those days, it wasn't worth nearly that much money, but the government seized it, paid off whatever liabilities were outstanding, and kept the rest to itself,
right,
which is just another reason to piss off everybody. So this is very much a political case. It was political from the get-go. And so, libertarians got behind it. President Trump promised those of us at the Libertarian National Convention that he would pardon Ross. He had spoken to Ross's mother, Lynn, directly. And at the risk of pissing off some people, look, we have to – I know that you have viewers who are big supporters of Angela McArdle and the leadership of the Libertarian Party, and you've got viewers who are the opposite.
Right.
But we would be remiss if we did not say that Angela's direct contact with President Trump played a major role in pulling this off. That's just the truth. And you've got to hand it to Angela. This was a major victory, I believe, for the Libertarian Party, for libertarianism, as well as the Ulbricht family, and a bit of a victory for those of us that stood for this cause. All of the candidates vying for the presidential nomination, right, inside the Libertarian Party, were very, very supportive. Our team made it a central point of the speech I gave asking for the nomination. And lots of others were extremely supportive of this idea. And so there is a great deal of momentum inside the Libertarian Party. I also got to say that personally, Lynn, his mom, wow, the amount of effort that she put in, not only physically moving from place to place to be close to Ross, but attending Libertarian Party conventions and other events, attending fundraisers. I'll tell you, John, this will make my point.
Yeah.
When I was running for Congress several years ago, she came to a fundraiser for me, just to impress upon me the importance of this case, to make sure it was on my mind, to make sure it was on the mind of others. That's how hard she worked. I mean, if she's going to congressional campaign fundraisers for, you know, nobodies like me inside the Libertarian Party to make her case, she was working hard.
Oh, yeah. She's a mom advocate. There's no doubt about
it. It paid off.
Yeah, and let me. I wasn't ignoring you, Mike. I was looking down to try to check my notes to see. I think I'm trying to. Ross served almost 10 years of that double life plus 40.
More, he served 11 years in a few days, if you include the pre-trial time.
The pre-trial time, right? So total incarceration. Let's call it 11 years.
Yeah.
Which is like you've just outlined, for all the reasons you've outlined. And listen, this is where I get to do a mea culpa. As you know, I'm no big fan of Angela McArdle and the LNC. And I'll also state, I hate being wrong. And I hate it when people call me out for being wrong. I hate all three of those things, Mike.
We all do.
But in this case, call me out. I'm glad I was proven wrong. I never thought Trump would do this. For a lot of different reasons. And my problem was they were logical reasons where I thought he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
The main reason being is he didn't need the Libertarian Party, as it turned out, right? Because he won decisively. So that was political reason number one, that he didn't need it. Political reason number two, Thomas Massie, since 2020, had been hounding since 2017, had been hounding Trump to release Albright. To no avail. He just got a deaf ear towards it. Massey also continued nagging the Biden administration to get Ross freed to no avail. So we got Ross free, which is wonderful. But now I got to ask you, as a wrap up, the political conundrum his release caused. Again, 100% elation for Ross being freed, for his family, for his mom in particular, who worked so tirelessly on his behalf. But I have to ask you, tie it up for me, because it ties into everything we said. Biden, among those 8,000 other folks for nonviolent drug offenses that he either commuted or pardoned, Ross was not one of them. He excluded Ross from those 8,000 or so federal drug offenders. And again, with no explanation, like, I don't think nonviolent drug offenders should be in lockup, except for Ross. Then you've got the complete opposite with Trump, where he's like, this was an injustice. I've spoken to McCardle. I've spoken to Lynn Ulbricht. We're letting Ross go. Kudos for letting him go. But explain to me why you let him go when literally the day before, less than 24 hours, you've announced, we're going to start looking for the death penalty for all drug offenses. By the way, not like violent drug offenses, just like, hey, we caught you smuggling across the border or whatever. So talk to me about that. Like, again, the single act, freeing Ross? Now and tell me about all the garbage around here.
You know, politics. And let's set the principles aside for just a moment. Because, right. You know, I agree with you. I don't like prosecuting drug offenses at all. And I certainly don't like upping them to the point where the sentences are similar to what
capital cases
use to punish people who are actually violent. Let's set all of that aside just for a moment. Clearly, this is politics. Clearly.
Right.
The fact that there is no check on presidential pardons is a problem. And I don't mean that it's a problem because I don't like this pardon or I don't like that problem. It's a systemic problem in our Constitution. Joe Biden has shown that. He has just shut down what I believe is an investigation that would lead to his back door, if not his front door.
Right.
I would support there being some check on this. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if it needs to be constitutional or if it can be handled by federal statute, judicial review, right? A court review of it. But we cannot send the signal that we don't like our judicial system and that we need a politician to fix it in batches. That is not a good signal to send. What I fear is that, just like in the case of fiscal conservatism being left by the wayside, that instead of these pendulum swinging corrections, we will get exaggerations, and it'll flip flop from one side to another, getting larger instead of small. It's one thing if those swings dampen over time.
Right.
You did something stupid, so I'll do something dumb, then you do something silly, and eventually this peters out. What I fear is that you do something silly, I do something dumb, then you do something really crazy, and I do something insane, right? And this gets larger over time. At the moment, you know, we're okay. I don't like pardoning people who are violent. I don't like police officers, in effect, being told, you got tased, you got punched in the face, you got pepper sprayed, suck it up, buttercup. The judicial system is not behind you. I don't like that. But at the moment, we're not in a meltdown scenario. Today, the left is melting down and exaggerating the importance of this. I don't like that either. At the moment, we're in an okay place. It's where we're headed that worries me so much.
Yeah, and I like the way you tied that up, because my final question to you was going to be, do you support some sort of constitutional amendment about the pardon power? But Mike, having great minds thinking alike, I guess we got there without me having to lead you. Because I was going to suggest, like, the presidential pardon power, in Trump's first term, if you recall, we had all these whispers. Is he going to pardon himself on the way out the door? Is that constitution? Does that pass constitutional muster? Well, there's nothing in the Constitution that says you can't pardon yourself if you're the president, right? And back then, I remember saying, well, you know what? Maybe Congress should address that before we get to that crisis, you know, in the future at some point, right? So to that extent, I kind of hear what you're saying. Perhaps it's up to Congress, which they'll never do because they're too polarized. But would they – and I guess your answer was you'd be in support of this, is have some process, whether it's judicial review to present a batch of candidates to the president or the president handing a list to for judicial review that says these are the people I'm considering or here's the action I'm considering. Does it pass like whatever?
Yeah.
I don't know if the Supreme Court would be there or like a federal court or I'm not sure.
Rules, you know, you can't pardon yourself. You can't shut down an investigation that would reveal something about yourself.
Right.
You know, part of the problem with shutting down the Hunter Biden case is that now there's no one motivated to look into Joe Biden. By the way, we didn't get to Anthony Fauci.
Right.
I think is a real problem. It's not because I am certain, because I'm not, that what Fauci did was illegal.
Criminal.
Personally, yeah. I think the problem with the behavior inside of a lot of places under the HHS umbrella is worse than criminal behavior. It is behavior that's legal and not good for us. That's a much bigger problem than behavior that's illegal. It is bad for us as a nation.
I think you're pointing towards, what was it Hayek said? It's the pretense of knowledge that a lot of these folks in these agencies have, right?
We need a special investigator. If that leads to the revelation of crime, then we need a special prosecutor one step at a time. I'm not suggesting that we do an end around the appropriate judicial process.
Right.
But this idea of pardoning people in advance of criminal investigation is profoundly A, stupid, and B, bad for us.
Mike, I think that's the great last word to have. So on that note, I want to thank Mike Termott for joining us this week on Liberty Lens. I'm your host, Big John, co-host Big John. Mike, any parting words for the viewers?
Yeah, see you next week.
All right, see you next week, everybody. Peace right here on Liberty Lens on grumblingsmedia.com.